TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Okay, go!
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Shortly past 9 in the morning. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Jam-packed show coming for you over the next 3 hours. In about 30 minutes' time, we're joined by the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man, Rick Peckham. At 10:30 in the morning, we're joined by the Minnesota Wild color commentator, Mike Greenlay. And all around that, we have a full recap of everything that's happened in this first full week of NHL free agency. Richie, Ezzy, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Morning, Drew.
Good morning. Back to our usual environment.
Okay.
Well, we were at the Free Press
Cafe
last.
Come on,
that's
Drew.
True. That's true. I can give you that.
Don't throw him under the bus this early in the morning.
It's so much fun to throw him under the bus. I'll give him credit, though. I don't like giving him credit, though, but he was on time for our pre-show meeting.
And you have to give me till at least 10 after 9 before you can throw me under the bus. But, yeah, I was on time today, but, you know, it's beautiful outside.
10 minutes late to pick me up.
Well, that's okay, though. I mean, it's pretty close.
Well, it's usually an hour, so.
That's true.
I'll take the 10 minutes.
When I saw you guys driving down Pamina honking the horn repeatedly, I was stunned to see that Ezzy was in the car.
That's because a rabbit ran in front of us, so it wasn't because we were honking at you. We just wanted
That's because Drew was eating a rabbit.
Yeah.
Rabbit is good for breakfast. You ever had a good rabbit? It's nice. Anyways, gentlemen, good morning. Why don't we get started talking about we'll spend the first half an hour of the show talking about the Winnipeg Jets. They were active in the first week of free agency, which is it's sort of a differing of opinion. I think that I like the moves that they made. Richie, you think they should be tanking for bottom spot in the NHL.
Not like intentionally tanking, Drew, but I just think that the move is, you know, what it does is it fills a need of size up front. It fills a need of scoring up front. It feels the need of probably pushing Brian Little to the second center slot, if he's even a second-line center. But overall, what I ask rhetorically is, in the big scheme of things, what does this do? And what does it make for the Jets? And I'm not so sure it does anything. So I don't know why, you know, people are excited because a player opted to sign here. The player opted to sign here because they offered him the most money. And there's nothing against the player for accepting that. And there's nothing against the team for offering him that. But at the same time, I mean, I don't understand why. I mean, there seems to have been a big-time reaction over the signing of a guy in his mid-30s who's had a sketchy track record over the past couple of years. Sure, he's quote-unquote reformed under Brent Sutter. That's not to say that will continue under Claude Noel. Overall, does the team get better for next year? Yes, absolutely. And I understand the other reason for the signing, is to bridge the gap to a guy like Mark Scheifele. You sign him to a 2-year deal. You're probably hoping Mark Scheifele in 2 years is ready to take a step on the, to be an NHL starter, NHL starter being like they're hoping a second line center at least. But, you know, what does it do for them now? It probably cuts. Looking at all the teams in the East that got better, the problem is, Ezzy, all the teams worse than the Jets got better. All the teams better than the Jets got worse, but not bad enough that the Jets are better. So I'm not sure in the big scheme of things this does anything for them.
Richie, I think you've got valid points, and I wouldn't probably disagree with you. And I think that you have to look at the three signings. I mean, we'll throw Montoya in there as a backup.
We're talking about the Jokinen one. So
okay,
let's keep
Jokinen
talking
and Ponikarovsky. I mean, those are you can't underestimate that because that's a depth signing. But okay, let's focus on Jokinen and Ponikarovsky. And looking at that from a short term perspective, I think it makes the Jets better. I mean, I don't think it is going to be the difference maker between them making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. I think a lot of things have to happen in order for the Jets to make the playoffs next year. You're going to have to see a guy like Alexander Burmistrov elevate his game. You're going to have to see Evander Kane take his game to a next level, that next level that you talk about. There's a lot of things that have to happen for the Jets to make the playoffs. So in that sense, Richie, I think that signing Olli Jokinen, I think it does make them better. The Jets have a number one center now. That's their number one center. Olli Jokinen is an upgrade over Brian Little as far as offense goes, as far as size goes, as far as experience goes. It's a good signing. Now, whether or not, you know, he should have been signed for $4.5 million, that's pretty much the going rate. I mean, he's got the experience for a 60-point guy at this stage in his career. That's, you know, about his ceiling. Obviously, he was playing with a Jerome Iginla, so those numbers might go down a little bit. But I'd say he's, you know, a 50 to 60-point guy.
Realize also, Ezzy, they needed to spend that money. I mean, right now they're $4.9 million, $4.93 million below the salary cap.
That's right.
Floor.
If they didn't sign top-flight talent, they never would have got to the floor.
Right, because right now they have four guys to sign, right, to take them to the roster level. Right now they're at 19. They have four more guys to sign. The issue, of course, is, you know, Evander Kane's the guy who's going to be making money out of that group. The rest of them probably won't make it that much money. So without the Jokinen contract on the books, they wouldn't even have made the floor. So that needs to be taken into account as well.
And if exactly, so in that respect, I would say that if you're going to spend that money, that's probably a good guy to spend it on. I mean, we went over the possible free agent forwards the Jets could sign, and center is the weakest position. So once again, I think you do have to look at this from a short-term and long-term perspective, and in that sense, I think it's a good signing. Now, Jets fans obviously are looking at the team now, and they're saying, okay, are we going to make the playoffs? Who's giving us a ray of hope here? And Olli Jokinen obviously had the offer, the one-year contract offer from Vancouver, and he decided to pick Winnipeg. Now, Jets fans should like that in the sense that probably it will help Evander Kane's game. It'll probably make the Jets
better. I don't see them playing together.
Well, we're going to talk line combinations next segment, so hold off on discussing who's going to play with who. But, I mean, you know, you bring in Olli Jokinen, you're bringing in, you know, at least you're bringing in top-flight talent. Whether or not he's really top-flight talent or not is a separate issue, but there's no real argument that Olli Jokinen can occupy one of your top two center spots, and that's something that you weren't sure you could say about Brian Little last year.
Yeah, that's true.
And now, there is a valid argument that you are making about whether or not, for the long-term success of this team, that is a good decision to make. Are they better off keeping, you know, keeping the roster similar to what it was last year, probably finishing bottom five in the NHL and hoping to get either Seth Jones or Nathan MacKinnon?
There's that angle. There's also the angle they can possibly trade for younger talent. What I'm saying is in 2 years, Jokinen's not going to be here.
Right. We know that.
So I mean,
or if he is here, you hope that he's playing a different role than your first-line center.
I don't see Olli Jokinen converting to a checking role. So what I'm saying here, Drew, is, you know, if it's not a player that in a couple of years can grow with the team, I'm not sure what long-term this does. And it bridges you to Mark Scheifele. And Mark Scheifele, by all accounts, is going to be a good player. What if Mark Scheifele, as it happens, many draft picks don't turn out, isn't a good player? Then what Olli Jokinen is a bridge to nowhere.
Well, but you don't know that. So, I mean, at some point...
You don't know that, but you also don't know that he's going to be good.
I agree with you, but you're better off having that bridge than rushing Mark Scheifele up like we've seen the Jets do with past...
Not necessarily connected. You don't have to have the bridge to not rush Scheifele up.
Well, then who are you going to... You need a bridge. Who else are you going to have if you don't have a guy?
I mean, if you want to have a guy for a year, put Achipov in the middle for a year. Or play Bermistrov again for the middle for a year. They don't want to do that, but play him in the middle for a year. You have Little. You could put Achipov in the middle. I mean, Jokinen's not good at faceoffs. Jokinen's a better center, and he's a center. But he's not good at faceoffs. Andropov, not a great skater. But if you wanted to do that, you could throw him up there.
How much of these moves? Okay. I mean, your points are valid. I don't disagree with your points. I think I disagree with the concept of subtly tanking, because that's sort of what you're arguing is if you keep things the status quo, it would be a subtle tank job. But let me ask you this question. How much of this move, do you think, then, was influenced by the fact they had to get to the salary cap floor?
Quite a factor, for sure. It's not to say they wouldn't have been able to get there other ways, but this is a good way to do it, a short-term deal that, you know, pays a guy who's a solid player some money and makes sure that you're at the floor.
It definitely played a factor. They're not going to spend the money on defense. They've already got a lot of money on defense. Mm-hmm. They're already paying Ron Hainsey, whatever it is, $3.5 million or $4 million, whatever it is, around there. They're already paying Buff big
money. $4.5 million for Ron Hainsey.
There you go. And they're already paying Enstrom a significant amount of money.
3.75.
Right. So you're not going to spend another $4.5 million on a defenseman. That's why you knew you traded Oduya because you knew you weren't going to sign him. Chicago obviously traded for him and signed him. But it has a factor, or it was a factor. I mean, the Jets are obviously still, they still have inherited the Atlanta Thrashers. And they're still rebuilding their team, and they still need more top six talent. They needed a number one center. And Olli Jokinen is not that number one center that's going to make them an excellent team for the next 5 to 10 years. He is a short-term solution. And I think he will be good enough for the Jets to be a slightly better team. Now, that's up to... Some people think the Jets are going to be a little bit worse next year. Some people think they're going to be a little bit better. That's, I mean, that's not really known right now. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to...
The best thing they can do is deal him. When he plays really well, deal him.
Jokinen.
Sure.
Yeah. At the deadline this year.
Right. And that's why we've been talking about for the last little while, are they going to deal Toby Enstrom? And if they are going to, either you sign him or you deal him now.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and that's what we've been speculating on. We speculated on it with regards to James Van Riemsdyk. You talk about all these guys who are supposedly on the trade block. Mm-hmm. You know, Rick Nash is probably, you know, not really being one of those guys, but a guy like Bobby Ryan in Anaheim, you know, Anaheim has a void on defense. You know, would they be interested in discussing something about Toby Enstrom? Or even if they aren't, why have the Jets made that call to find out? I mean, that's the question that we don't know the answer to, but that's something that, well, as a Jets fan, you would hope that they are making those inquiries.
Based on what Matt Carl made, Toby Enstrom is going to fetch $6 million on the market. So are you going to be paying him close to that amount, or will he take less to stay here? And if not, then you need to have that, just need to move forward and see what you can get from him in a deal and not wait until the middle of the year.
And if Oduya brought those draft picks, Enstrom at next year's trade deadline.
You can't wait till the deadline.
You can't. I'm just saying, though, if they don't sign him, mm-hmm. then that's what you're going to put yourself in a position. You know you're going to pigeonhole yourself in that position, so why not deal with it? And they could get a lot right now for Toby Enstrom. When you look at the teams who need defensemen, mm-hmm. you could go up and down the list, but that really want defensemen, start with the teams that lost out on Suter, exactly. Nashville and Detroit.
Yeah.
They don't want Toby Enstrom.
Philly wanted him. They lost Carl.
Now is the time to strike if you're going to be making a trade involving That's Toby right. Enstrom.
And That's I know, right. and I know that fans, I know that fans like Toby Enstrom, but right now, as far as tradable assets go, it's not even close. It's only him.
It's only him unless you want to. Yeah, he is the best asset that you can have.
Unless
you're dealing Kane. On the back end, Toby Enstrom is the guy that most teams would be looking at wanting off your roster.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and now is the time to do it unless you're going to re-sign him because you get more value for him today than you do at the trade deadline or in the middle of the year. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Winnipeg Jets lines going forward, how we project them playing out. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You heard the commercial for him during the commercial break. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David takes the stress out of buying and selling a home, and you are best off to call David Carr for all of your real estate needs. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Be like our friend in the studio, Richard Pollock. He used David, and David took all the stress out of that real estate transaction.
Did a great job. Very happy with the work he did, and very happy with the place I got.
There you go. Your nice new mattress. You're almost moved in.
That's right.
There you go. It's exciting days in the Richard Pollock world.
We're not invited over, though, Drew.
No, that goes without saying.
I gave you guys a key, and then I changed the locks.
Yeah, naturally. And then you called the authorities when you thought we were breaking in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what I would have done. So I don't criticize you. Let's talk about the Jets lines going forward. We just spent the last segment discussing, you know, the additions, Ponikarovsky, the addition of Jokinen. I mean, you know, obviously we didn't talk that much about Montoya. We know he's the backup goaltender.
Yep.
You know, those are the Jokinen and Ponikarovsky. How do you see the Jets, you know, lines playing out for next year? What is Jokinen's strength? Is he a passer? Is he a goal scorer?
He's a straight-ahead guy. He's a north-south guy. He's not a great passer. He puts the puck on net. He's pretty strong on the puck. But no, there's no... his passing is not his forte.
So his pass... So, and then you got a guy like... So you got... He's a shooter.
Yep.
And then you got a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's a passer.
Yep. Yes.
Now, would you put a guy like Wheeler... Would you load up that first line and maybe go Kane, Jokinen, Wheeler?
No. Because I don't think Kane and Jokinen can play together because they're both just shoot, you know, they won't use each other on the ice. The goal is to use five players on the ice, and those guys don't necessarily always use five. And having them out there with each other, it will hurt you.
So, okay, so you want to keep Kane on the left wing separate from Jokinen in the center.
Yep.
So who do you want as your right winger with Kane?
Always like the combination of Kane and Wheeler. I think in the small periods of time they played together, a little bit during the middle of the season last year, but generally speaking after penalty kills, those guys were dynamite together. Great speed. You have Wheeler the passer and Kane the scorer. And they're young guys that can build together. They're big guys. I like them as a combination. I thought that Noel didn't go to them enough.
So you'd want Little centering that line? Or would you want somebody else?
I would have Little centering that line because I think Little also adds an element of speed. And so you really clamp down now on your pressuring the other team's defensemen and, you know, forwards because they have to be back with the pressure and how fast those players are.
So if you're not that you need to rank lines, but if you're ranking lines, you would say, you know, a line with Kane on your left, Wheeler on your right, and Little up the middle. That would be your number one line.
Yeah, that's your best line.
Okay, so then you got Jokinen as your second line center. Now, mm-hmm. Calling it first line or second line doesn't really matter.
It's relevant, but, yeah.
You know, so you had Jokinen in the middle. I assume you have Ladd on the left hand side.
Yeah, I think those guys could work well together because Ladd is a guy who will go to the net, get in some rebounds.
The dirty areas, as well.
Yeah, dirty areas, and puts a puck on net, and Jokinen can go to the net.
So you have Ladd on your left, you have Jokinen in the middle.
This is my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, of course, this is just our opinions.
Yeah.
And if you want, you know, we want to hear your opinion, so you can tweet at us, at Illegal Curve right now, and we'll look at those throughout the show.
And I want to jump.
Let me just finish. Right wing there, I mean, the Jets, if you look at the Jets depth chart, where they're lacking the most right now is on the right, wing.
Yeah, I would put Antti Miettinen up there. Okay. Or on Team Yetinen, just because, you know, what you do is you have a guy who's, defensively responsible. Not that Jokinen and Ladd aren't. I mean, they are. But you also
Ladd wasn't great defensively last year in his own zone.
Yeah, there's some times where everybody is not great in their own zone. But yeah, Drew, I would put Yetinen beside Jokinen. You have the right wing, you have the right-hand shot, you have a Finnish player with Jokinen. I'm not sure if they've ever played together in world championships or things like that in the past. But a guy you can toss, you know, not a great offensive skill, but not awful. So, you know, he can toss in 10 to 15 goals on the side there. And the truth is, I think, you know, moving to the next line, I think Antropov and Burmistrov really showed some nice chemistry last year. And Burmistrov's development is important here. So why not put a line of Burmistrov, Antropov, and Ponikarovsky together as your third line? Because lots of teams kind of do these three-line scoring things. And then you have your fourth line of, Jimmy Slater and you probably have Patrice Cormier playing left side.
Maybe.
You know, maybe you throw a guy like Klingberg in. You obviously have Thorburn, and I'm forgetting one other player right now.
No, you've got everybody.
You got everybody?
I have it written out, and I'll just jump in here really quickly.
Oh, Mahacek.
Mahacek will most likely make the team.
So your 13th man there, sorry for interrupting, your 13th man there is sort of, depending on how they're playing, is either Mahacek or Cormier or Thorburn.
Yeah.
Is that sort of how you're envisioning it?
Yeah.
One of those, one of those guys.
I like to see the younger guys get a shot here. You know, a guy like Cormier on the left side there.
Well, especially if you're going to, I mean, there's nothing worse for a young player's development than having him with the big club and then never really playing him on a regular basis.
Yeah, so I think get him out there. He can forecheck.
Ezzy, how do you see
him
playing?
He's a little bit feisty, can add a little bit of grit. Because, I mean, the truth is, Ezzy, quickly before you get into your lines, Ezzy, Ponikarovsky adds no grit, and Jokinen's not really the grittiest player. He's a big guy. So Cormier would add a nice grit element to this team because this team isn't that tough.
When I think when you look at this team, you look at the top three players, it's obviously Evander Kane, Olli Jokinen, and Blake Wheeler. And, you know, there is an argument for keeping Brian Little at that position so that he can play with Blake Wheeler. And obviously, you know, that Ladd-Little-Wheeler line was their number one line, but we all know that Andrew Ladd is better suited for a second and third line role.
So is Brian Little.
So you can make that argument. In that sense, you know, Olli Jokinen, obviously, you know, he probably has more offensive upside, but he isn't a natural playmaker. And, you know, we Richie did his analysis on illegalcurve.com, and you know, we got some comments from Jets fans saying, well, you know, he had 40 assists last year. Well, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a playmaker. I mean, Olli Jokinen obviously has an element of passing, but he's not a setup guy like Wheeler is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you put Kane and Wheeler flanking Brian Little, that's going to be a very fast team. And Brian Little, sure, he doesn't have the size that Jokinen has, and you'd like to see Little get better at faceoffs, and, you know, you hope that he will. And you know, you have to think that Brian Little knows that, and obviously he's not the strongest guy. But I did have Ponikarovsky, Antropov, and Mietinen on that third line. But you could easily...
So who did you have on the right side as your second line?
I had Bermy. And Bermy obviously was on the second line with Wellwood and Kane, and then they changed that line and had Antropov. There are obviously some...
Let me just interrupt. You have a second line of Ladd, Little, and Burmistrov?
And that's obviously putting Jokinen as the number one center.
So your first line... I just want to recap. Your first line is Kane, Jokinen, and Wheeler.
Right, and the only thing that's switching there is the Jokinen. Center with Richie's
okay.
lines.
Fine.
And then basically you're moving Mietinen up from the third line and then switching Bermy. So you'd have Ponikarovsky, Antropov, and Bermy as your third line.
As your third line. So you're moving Mietinen into the second line role next to... So you have Ladd, Little, and Mietinen.
If under Richie's line, or I think
under Richard's line.
Well, I had Bermy originally, but I think that those two guys are interchangeable. The fact is, this is Bermy's third year, and you know, in my opinion, he was rushed, and he could have definitely used some seasoning in the AHL. And as far as Mietinen goes, he would probably complement either Little or Jokinen better. And the Jets are going to have some options. I mean, Richie, if you have Ponikarovsky and Antropov on your third line, that's not a checking line. You're going for a little bit more scoring.
Yeah.
If they decide to put Jimmy Slater on the third line, great face-off guy, and I think they will. Jimmy Slater, you know, is the type of guy that he'll go third line, fourth line. You know, when they need him to penalty kill, he'll go first line penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can also throw out Hajek's got some scoring ability, obviously, and he did well when he was here last year. Then if you want to, you know, have a little bit more of a checking line, then yeah, you throw up Cormier, you throw up Klingberg. So they've got some options. And, you know, Jets fans should be excited about that because these guys are going to get an opportunity. A guy like Carl Klingberg, Patrice Cormier, they might be buried on other teams and they might not get these opportunities. Those are the types of guys that will get the opportunity on the second line. If Mietinen's struggling, you know, they'll have an opportunity to play a scoring role. But you are going to have a lot more options with Jokinen and Ponikarovsky. They give you depth. I mean, as far as how many more goals they're going to give the Jets next year, I mean, they're not going to give them more than 15 or 20 more goals than last year, but, you know, they could use that. And so, you know, they're going to have some interesting options because keep in mind, Kyle Wellwood's not coming back.
Well, we don't know that for sure. We assume he isn't because he hasn't been signed yet.
Right. The signs right now are that he's not going to sign a contract at Stapleton.
But the Jets need right wingers. And Kyle Wellwood.
But Drew, where does he fit in? You know, like if he comes in.
You're right. And especially for what he wants based on his performance last year, he probably doesn't fit in.
Well, then where's everybody else going?
Well, I mean.
They've replaced him. I think he's gone.
I agree that I think he's gone because I'm not surprised he hasn't signed yet because he's got a bad reputation. But I mean, I think that if he had an offer from the Jets, he probably would have already taken it.
Richie, if you look at it, apples for apples. And you look at who left and who came in. Tanner Glass
went to Pittsburgh. I'm not saying
Kyle Wellwood's gone, and Tim Stapleton's gone.
I'm just not saying they haven't gotten better. He's asking the question, and I think it is a legitimate question, should they have gotten better to finish ninth or to finish eighth and lose in the first round?
And also, Drew, to add in on that, with players that will never help them in the long run.
Which is fine.
You can get in there and acquire a guy like a James Van Riemsdyk, get closer to the bottom of the cap and get better not only now but in the future with the team.
For the next 5-6 years.
You're not going to get an argument for me. I think Brian Burke and the Leafs did very well to get Van Riemsdyk.
It's the idea of that kind of player as opposed to a Jokinen who's on the downside of his career. And who's been, by the way, playing for a lot of time in Calgary with Jerome Iginla.
Yep.
So, I mean, those numbers also need to be taken into account. He's playing with Jerome Iginla.
So his numbers might be inflated as a result.
Maybe,
is what you're
maybe
saying.
Not. Not that Iginla's the easiest guy to play with necessarily, but just to point that out there.
I think your point, look, you go around this table, none of us would pose an argument that the Winnipeg Jets aren't better today than they were when we were on the air last Saturday.
Right.
Before free agency started.
Right.
But it is a legitimate question, and it's one that you can't answer today, but it'll probably play out throughout the course of the years. Should they have made these moves if all they're going to do is finish 8th or 9th or 10th or wherever in the Eastern Conference, not make a significant difference, not make a significant impact, and only hurt your draft status for next season?
Do you guess they're a playoff team?
No, I don't think they're a playoff team.
As?
I think they're borderline, whatever that means. I think they're going to be close to a playoff spot.
Okay, Tampa was worse than them last year, just as close, because on the last day of the season is when they went right below Winnipeg. They've added Lynn back. They've added Carl. They've added Salo. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they've shored up significant holes there. Okay? You have Carolina. They added Jordan Staal, who'd be the number one center of this team easily.
And a full year of Eric Staal being Eric Staal.
Right.
Because last year, the first half, he wasn't himself.
That's true. Washington lost Semin. They added Ribeiro. I mean, so you're looking at all these other teams in the division.
The only team that didn't get better, and I think that will be worse, is Florida.
Yeah, and they have the system coming up.
And they have the best prospects in the league.
They have a lot of prospects. I mean, yeah, Minnesota and other teams have, and Detroit have good prospects too. But so, I mean, these are the factors taken into account. You know, Philly lost Carl and those guys, and Pittsburgh lost and traded Mihalik and lost Staal. I'm saying these teams are so much better than the Jets that maybe them getting worse doesn't mean that they're that much
worse. Your point is you can't look at the Jets roster and their improvements in a vacuum. They have to look at it as a big picture and how the entire NHL around them in their division and outside their division did. And there's no disputing the Jets improved, but did the other teams in their division, you know, improve more? And I think the answer, at least my answer, and I think Richard's answer, and probably your answer, would be yes. Let's go to break. When we come back, Rick Peckham, Tampa Bay Lightning broadcaster, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man on Sun Sports Network, Rick Peckham. Good morning, Rick. How are you? Rick, are you there?
Yes, I am. I think our connection's breaking up a little bit, but I hear you now.
There you go. How are you this morning, Rick?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks very much. Rick, let's get started right into the moves that the Tampa Bay Lightning have made so far this offseason. The first big move they made was acquiring Anders Lindback from the Nashville Predators. Why did Tampa choose Lindback over some of the other goaltending options that were available on the market?
Well, it wasn't a great market, certainly nothing against Anders Lindbach, who I think is going to develop into a fine goaltender. But, you know, the unrestricted free agent route, there wasn't a lot of great possibilities there. Certainly no one seems to be interested in trying to give somebody an offer sheet in terms of going after restricted free agents. So you're looking at the trade possibilities, something that fits in your budget. A young up-and-coming goaltender, I think what the Lightning are looking at is a situation where we're growing into a very solid franchise. They want someone who can grow along with the team. You know, there was a rumor that they were interested in signing Roberto Luongo. You know, here's a guy with a big cap number and so forth. I think they felt that a young up-and-comer with the abilities, the capabilities that goaltenders need at this day and age, like obviously good size, and Jets fans know that with Andre Pavlik. And here's a guy who's 6'6" and moves in the net extremely well, that's trading for one of these young up-and-comers, and I guess Jonathan Bernier might have been another option, was the way to go. And a lot of reports and a lot of eyewitness reports and seeing Lindbach play and talking to a lot of different people, they feel very good that he's the young man they can build around.
Rick, the Lightning signed Sammy Salo. It's been a long time in Vancouver. They signed him to a two-year deal. Why did the Lightning think that Salo was worth a two-year deal with his injury history when Vancouver would only max out at 1 year?
Well, I think to get him, you probably had to ask or add the second year. And I think you're looking at a guy who could really help the power play, eat up a lot of minutes, a right-hand shot. I think every player is a risk in terms of injury. You have to look at that, and some guys have a history of it, and you know, they might have run into injuries at some point in their career, and maybe they're able to put those behind them from there. Or, you know, it's just something you have to live with. So I think in Salo's case, he's an outstanding player when healthy, and they certainly needed someone to add to the top four, and he's a guy who can help them in a lot of different areas.
Rick, it's pretty obvious that Matt Carl had a very good season in Philadelphia last year, but he wasn't the number one defenseman. Now, why did Tampa Bay decide to pay him as a number one defenseman?
You kind of cut out there during the question, but I think you're asking about whether he can play in the top four, Matt Carl, or why they went after him. I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Yeah, it was more about Matt Carl being paid as a number one defenseman when really, to this point in his career, he has only been a top four defenseman and not a quote-unquote number one defenseman. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, it's connection just got a little bad there, so I missed the question again. I can tell you that, you know, the way the defense is constructed for the Lightning, they don't have that dedicated number one, number two guy that you start with and you kind of build underneath. I think this is, you know, not quite to the extent it was 2 years ago when this regime took over that they went by defense by committee, but I still think that's kind of the philosophy. I don't think that Matt Carl is going to be expected to play Duncan Keith minutes. I don't think that Sammy Salo is going to be expected to play those minutes either. I think that with Eric Brewer is a very solid top four defenseman, up and coming star like a Victor Hedman who's going to grow into being one of those top two defensemen that you look for, along with Carl, who can play in any situation, along with Salo, who can play in any situation. I think they're looking at building a well-rounded defense with a lot of capabilities. And Matt Termina, who was signed yesterday, the former New Jersey Devil and Providence College product, I think that adds even more depth. They go to camp with, you know, eight NHL-ready defensemen. Guy Boucher, the head coach, likes to use seven defensemen quite a bit in his lineup, so this certainly gives him a little bit more depth in doing that. So I think that's been the philosophy in building the defense.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Rick Peckham. He's the Lightning play-by-play man on the Sun Sports Network. Rick, you mentioned Victor Hedman, and sort of staying with both Matt Carl and Victor Hedman. You know, everybody knows that Matt Carl's best, you know, attributes tend to be on the offensive side of the defensive game. Do you think that the Matt Carl signing indicates that the team may not think that Victor Hedman has the same offensive upside that he appeared to have when he was drafted by the Lightning?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, he has played 3 years in the league. I think that, you know, they want to bring him along in that area. But, you know, is he the bomber they need from the power play on the left point? Not at this point. So I think that, you know, when you look at those situations last year, Victor didn't play in a lot of power plays because they went with a Marc-Andre Bergeron or someone like that, who is more of a veteran power play presence. So we'll see. We'll see how it develops with him. I think they're looking for him to take a step forward in all elements of his game. They certainly feel that for the most part last year he played very, very well. Of course, he was hurt part of the year. And they look back to the 2011 playoffs with that run to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he was a major part of that with the level that he played at. So I'm sure he's going to get his share of opportunities as far as the power play and moving the puck in offensive situations. I think that, once again, balance on defense as well as puck-moving ability, I think, were the driving forces for developing this crew, whether it was signing players or drafting them or trading for them or whatever it was. Putting this group together, I think the overriding quality they were looking for is puck-moving ability.
Rick, we spoke about the defense now. We've spoken about the goaltending. On forward, the team acquired Benoit Pouliot, a player who's, you know, drafted really high in the NHL entry draft years back, and he's obviously been around a little bit in Minnesota and Montreal and Boston. Skill level's never really been a question, maybe a little bit of the drive. Why does Tampa think that they can, and maybe Guy Boucher specifically, think he can turn this guy into the player that many thought he could be when he was drafted?
Well, I think that they feel, you know, once again, Drew, you cut out during your question, so I'm just trying to guess at what you were going at here. But with Pouliot, they see him as a prospect to possibly play in the top six. It's not a guarantee. They're not expecting him to be a 25-goal guy. but they feel that his game is rounded out in his time with Montreal, especially kind of took off when he was traded from the Wild to the Canadiens a few years back, and then had a very solid year in a third line with Boston on a team where you better be able to play at both ends of the rink to play for Claude Julien. That's just demanded of you, and he grew into that kind of responsibility. I think they see him as that kind of a player, as a very solid third line left wing, and they can bring along maybe a young guy like a J.T. Wyman, who played pretty well in a half season that he had a chance to play last year, and they see Pouliot as a guy who maybe is depth for the top six if you have an injury up there, and he adds some size and grit on the third line. So I think he kind of fit the bill, and budget-wise, I think it also fit the bill.
Rick, I think everybody around this table agrees that the Tampa Bay Lightning have improved considerably this offseason. They needed to get better on defense. They signed Matt Carl. They signed Sammy Salo. They needed to address their goaltending situation. They did that with Anders Lindback. What's the expectation for the Tampa Bay Lightning next season? Is it to go on a long playoff run, just make the playoffs? What are they expecting out of the team next year?
Well, they're not promising a lot. In fact, they didn't promise a lot that first year. I think Steve Yzerman's stated goal is let's make the playoffs and then see what happens. And then I think the Lightning were the great example of that in 2010 and 11, where they exceeded expectations with the 93 points in the regular season, or the 103 points, I should say, in the regular season, and you know, go on that run to where they're a goal away from reaching the Stanley Cup Finals. To, you know, last year they underperformed, missed the playoffs by 8 points. I think he feels that they, you know, let's get into the playoffs and take it from there. Certainly the Southeast Division Championship last year with the Florida Panthers winning it, you know, is a kind of a weak third seed. That division championship can get you that third seed. You don't have to have 110 points to get it. So that might be a goal that they have, is win your division, make sure you get into the playoffs as a secondary goal, and see what it happens. I think we've seen year after year, the Kings, of course, are the shining example of what can happen when you just get in and take it from there. The Flyers from a couple of years ago, another one that just barely got into the playoffs, and they end up going to the Stanley Cup Finals against Chicago. So I think that's the goal. I don't think they're trying to promise too much here in terms of, you know, getting ahead of themselves with building a consistent winner. I think that's exactly what they want to do, is build a consistent winner that's a playoff contender every year, and you get into the postseason and take your chances.
Rick Peckham, Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man on Sun Sports Network. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks very much, Drew. Appreciate it.
Take care, Rick. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Rick Peckham of Sun Sports Network for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. While you're at it, you can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Southeast Division.
We're going to go division by division, team by team, 1 week into NHL free agency. You knew I was going to say that. Why are you laughing?
Drew, I knew it.
That's the classic Drew line.
It is.
That's
the
from the commercial.
We got famous off of that back in the Red River College days.
That's right. Famous, really? I don't know if we've ever been famous. Although you did get, didn't you get noticed the other day, Ezzy?
It's true. Top five Winnipeg Twitterer.
Yeah, yeah? That was.
Or tweeter.
That was very funny. It's always
is it Twitter or Twitterer?
Tweeter. Okay. Not to be confused with tweener. But it's funny when you meet someone that you don't know in real life and they recognize you from Twitter.
Well, that happened a few times last week when we were in Osborne Street Fest. Everybody you walk by knew you from Twitter.
No, but the thing is, I'm still me. I mean, you're still yourself on Twitter. It's not like you're a different persona on Twitter. It's just funny.
Some people are different. You're you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, we have like, what, almost 6,000 followers on Illegal Curve. And I mean, we've met people from all over that say they love the show. And we're talking about people from the U.S., people from Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver. I love Twitter. And I think that, you know, it's That's one of those little perks that you get. You meet new friends. I always want more friends. You know, because you guys aren't my friends. So
see, exactly. You were top five. You want to go over, tell people what happened?
We'll get to it later on.
Yeah, there's some type of top five Twitter. I don't know.
Tweeters, and you were never.
I don't know how official that was.
Some of the official. But you were top three.
Yeah. If Carter Chen doesn't say it's official, it's not official.
Let's talk about the Southeast Division, where it's actually been very quiet in terms of free agency in the Southeast Division. It was more active on the trade market. Jordan Staal to Carolina, yeah. And we talked about all the moves Tampa made. Probably the biggest loss in the Southeast Division would be Florida losing Jason Garrison from going from Florida to Vancouver.
Yeah, but Vancouver overpaid, right? So if you're a team like Florida, and Garrison slowed down at the end of the year, and other guys did some of his work for him. He's not the best defensively.
I think Philip Kuba's actually an upgrade.
You know what? That's a good point, Ezzy. And overall, yeah, Kuba played really well last year. Drew, and I think like Garrison was similar kind of to McCabe, Brian McCabe. And the reason for that is this. Garrison's shot is great, but what happens is his teams cheat on the shot. And when teams cheat on the shot, then what does he add? Sure, he moves the puck and things like that, but with Kulikov in the system, Kulikov, improving.
I really like Kulikov.
And having some, depth there in terms of guys they want to bring through the system. And signing Kuba, a guy who's a pretty good player, you don't lose that much by losing Garrison.
And, we also
They also lost Michael Samuelson.
Going back to Detroit. Not something that's going to be a huge issue for them.
Michael Samuelson, just on the topic of the Panthers and, who they lost, who they gained. Jason Garrison, nothing against him. He's a BC boy, an unsigned guy that had a good season. But you gotta calm down a little bit when you're looking at this guy. I mean, he came out of nowhere and he was getting a lot of goals on the power play. He's got one of the best shots in the league. But this guy isn't. He's arguably not only is he not a top two defenseman, he's not able to play a top four defenseman role because he's not the best defensively. I mean, he got all of his goals on the power play. But, again, we're not going to take anything away from him.
But look at their defense, Ezzy, without him. You have Campbell as your number one
guy.
Who
had a very good year last year.
You got Kuba up there now.
Yeah.
Those are obviously veterans. You got Jovanovski. Yeah. And you got your young guys like Gudbrandsson, a really underrated player like Mike Weaver. And a guy like Dmitry Kulikov who still needs to sign. I think they just signed Ellerby. I thought they signed Ellerby to a one-year deal. Close to it. Yep. So they have depth there. I mean, it's nothing special, guys. It's nothing crazy. But, it is some depth there. And the truth is, how much worse off are they without... I don't think they are that much worse off.
This team is
contending down the road because they have all these young prospects.
What do you think of their addition of Kuba? 2 years, $8 million, $4 million per year.
I mean, again, you're looking at... That's exactly the same situation as was with Jokinen.
He's a bridge.
A bridge.
But he's a bridge. Are the Florida Panthers better than the Jets?
I mean, I personally don't think they are right now as constructed. But, last year they were. I don't think they are. They're that much better at all.
You think last year was just everything turned out right for them?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a long-term...
No, because then their goaltending. I don't know how they even got to the playoffs with their goaltending. But you know what, Drew? It's that bridge. And can a guy like Kulikov play an expanded role and Gudbrandsson play expanded roles in that for that team?
But if you're the Florida Panthers and you sign Filip Kuba...
The problem is a little bit less different than it is in Winnipeg in that... The fans here are locked in for four to 5 years.
Right.
Right?
In Florida, if they don't win, nobody shows up.
And they won last year.
Win, it's iffy if they show up or not.
And they won last year. It's a little bit different there. But do I like Kuba replacing Garrison? I don't think there's that big of a drop-off there. But in the long term...
But the Florida Panthers...
How close are they to the floor? We should take into account as well.
Well, I can check on that. But the Florida Panthers would be very happy if... Filip Kuba ended up having to be their fifth or sixth defenseman because Kulikov and Gudbrandsson developed at a faster rate than they may have thought.
Florida has five spots, and they're still $8 million below. Now, they need to sign Versteeg.
Who filed for arbitration.
Right, and Kulikov. So they'll get there, but again, Kuba helps them get there, just like he helps Jokinen get the Jets to the floor.
I think the Florida Panthers are a team definitely still in that development stage. And then you also have to factor in, they've got some of the best prospects in the league. You've got Jonathan Huberdeau coming up. You've got Quentin Howden, who's from Manitoba, coming up. And, I think that Filip Kuba is, I don't think you've taken that big of a step back. Florida's another team, though, if you compare them to Carolina and Washington, they don't have as much offensive skill, and their goaltending is not as good as obviously Carolina's, and I would probably argue Washington's as well, but you've got Markstrom coming up. They're a team that's going to be good down the line. So really what they've done You know, they lost Garrison. They didn't overpay on Garrison. They didn't. I think if they would have signed him and given them that money, they're overpaying him. I think Vancouver kind of poached Garrison away from Florida, and they had to give him that money. And really, you know, we'll get into that, but I don't know if that was the best use of, you know, $5 million
a
year.
The term.
It was five years.
4.5 for 6 years.
Yeah,
was that
6 years.
Yeah.
You're giving a guy with one good year. And again, we're not taking anything away from Garrison because last year, you know, he put up a lot of goals on the power play. But you're giving a guy big-time money for 5 years.
Six years, $27.6 million.
And the thing is, with what happened with Roberto Luongo, like, why not give him a couple years? And then if he's good, then you give him another 3 or 4 year contract. But you give him 6 years, and now you're going to tie up a guy. And then if he doesn't perform like he did last year, Richie, then how are you going to trade him? You're going to have to basically.
Well, we've seen it not work out for Keith Ballard, another ex Florida guy that's struggling in Vancouver. You look at the other Southeast Division teams; they've been very quiet in terms of free agency. You know, Washington has done next to nothing.
They traded for Ribeiro, so they shore up their second line center role.
But they did that before in trading. They did that at the draft, knowing about strict.
Hey,
believe you me.
Based on the contracts that were handed out, you'd be smart to have avoided free agency.
You know what, Drew? I have no problem with that. All it was was
third and fourth liners getting paid far more than they're worth.
They re-signed Matthew Perreault and Jay Beagle. Those guys have been nice depth players for them, and they were good in the playoffs last year. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Washington, I think, is another team. I think I have them as a playoff team because I think last year they just underachieved.
Still made the playoffs last year.
I like Ribeiro in there instead of Semin. And, you know, I have to think that Ovechkin making the playoffs last year and the way Ovechkin played, you know, he'll have a better regular season than last year. So, again, Washington, you know, going into this season, I have to think Washington, again, is the favorite in that division. I mean, Carolina is going to compete, but Washington's still the cream of that division.
Carolina lost two guys. They lost Derek Jocelyn to Vancouver, but that's one year, $700,000.
Division's a bit of a toss-up, too. Tampa's in there as well.
Yeah, Brian Allen goes from Carolina to Anaheim, 3 years, $10.5 million.
Somehow added two guys in the back end who can't skate at all.
Brian Allen and
can't move out
Sheldon
there. Allen can move, but he's not very fast.
And so Carolina, again, they made their big move in acquiring Jordan Staal. But in terms of the free agency in the Southeast Division, the Winnipeg Jets were the most active of all the teams
in Tampa.
Yep.
Yeah, Tampa.
Carl and
Salo. You're right. So it's close there. Quickly, before we go to break, we didn't speak about it. Al Montoya is the Jets' backup.
You know, Drew, I like the move. I think you sign a younger player, a guy who, if he plays well, you can maybe get him for a little bit longer. Obviously, you know, he was drafted out of Michigan. I believe the main reason the Rangers drafted him was he had a really, really impressive performance at the World Junior Championships that year. And the Rangers thought highly of him, drafted him in the top 10 in the NHL draft when they really didn't know what they were doing.
Fourth overall?
Yeah, I think it was sixth overall or seventh. Okay. But a guy who never materialized and was acquired... from New York, he went over to Phoenix, where Don Maloney, I guess, was fairly, because Don Maloney used to work with the Rangers.
Sixth overall.
They had him. You know, they had him in Phoenix for a bit, and then goes down to Long Island. A guy who's younger. You know, I don't really buy the argument that Pavlik needs a veteran guy with him because you just gave him 5 years, so he better be able to handle it, regardless of whether or not there's a veteran. You get Montoya back there; he costs you minimal amounts of dollars in NHL terms, $601,000. The one thing I will caution fans about, though, is that you know. Chris Mason was the Jets' first choice, and so Jets fans were getting excited about Montoya, and I actually like Montoya signing better than I would have liked the Mason signing, because I think the talent level is, you know, it's negligible. You get younger and
less
a little bit less money, so I like all those aspects. But remember, the Jets offered Mason more money and term, and Montoya was sitting out there waiting for them at the end, so it wasn't like that was their master plan.
I think one other thing that Jets fans should be excited about here...
Also, sorry for interrupting here, Ezzy. If the Jets had known Chris Mason would turn down their offer... They may have tried hard to get Jonas Gustafsson.
But Gustafsson didn't want to come here. He wanted a better situation. Because right in Detroit, he plays with all those Swedish guys, but also he can get that job if he plays well.
Jonas Gustafsson was never going to be a Jet. So the thing with Al Montoya that people should be excited about is he was a high draft pick. He has lots of skill. He battled his way through the AHL, and it was harder for him, and he admitted that. It was harder for him. Drew, you were on that conference call, I believe.
He
admitted that it was harder for him. He thought it was going to be easier to step right into an NHL backup role and then possibly a starting role. But last year, and we saw one of these games in New York, we saw the Jets and Islanders games. Montoya was the number one goalie for the Islanders for a little bit last year. And if you look, and I know Jets fans will always look at numbers and say, okay, you know, his numbers weren't that good. But for a while there,
at the start of the year, they were.
He was, if you look at his first 15 or 20 games around there, he was winning games and his numbers were better. Towards the end of the year and the Islanders got further and further out of the playoffs, then his numbers suffered. Al Montoya is a very good goalie and he's a very capable backup. And I think we all would agree that Pavlik probably played too many games based on his conditioning. He wasn't ready to play 68 games or whatever he played. Montoya can give you 20 to 25 very good quality starts. So I think the Montoya signing, one-year deal for the league minimum, is a good signing. And I think at his age, 28 years old, 27 years old, I think there's a chance that he'll...
27.
He could be the backup here for, you know, a few years and stay. There's no reason to believe that if he doesn't perform well, they'll give him a two-year deal next summer.
The definition of a no-risk contract is a one-year, $601,000 deal.
And it's better for a backup goalie?
Yeah.
It's fine. No need to give Mason 2 years.
No. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to continue going division by division, recapping free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, Minnesota Wild color commentator Mike Greenlay is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Barn Grill. Beautiful day outside. No better way to spend that day than at the patio at the Cheer Barn Grill. You guys were at the Osborne Street Festival. The way they set that up, they take that whole parking lot, they make it into a patio on Canada Day. Might as well spend the rest of your weekend there at the Cheer Barn Grill, located on the patio. Great music, great DJs later on tonight. Great time on the patio at the Cheer Barn Grill.
Northeast Division.
Continuing on with our team-by-team review so far of the unrestricted free agency era, we go to Toronto, where the Leafs were very quiet in regards to unrestricted free agency. No big surprise, Brian Burke doesn't like the day. Their big acquisition, if you can call it that, is J.M. Clement, 2 years, $1.5 million, you know, $3 million total. Armstrong, he went to Montreal. We knew that.
They got rid of Kobe.
They bought him out and made him into a UFA. Do you agree with, you know, with Brian Burke's sort of hands off, you know, free agent frenzy attitude?
For the most part, Drew, it depends on your team needs, and I mean, sometimes it makes sense to enter the market, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, overall, Drew, most times they are overpays. Like who would say they're not overpays? I mean, Matt Carr will overpay. You know, Zach Parise, great player. Everybody loves Zach Parise. Doesn't even have a point a game in his career. 13 years with $98 million. It's an overpay.
And we'll talk about the Parise.
Yeah. Anytime any athlete in any sport gets $98 million, I think it's an overpay.
But you know what?
I think there's some countries that have that as their GDP.
Yeah, no, exactly. But we, you know, most of the contracts given out on free agent day, Jason Garrison, overpay. Maybe he's going to be good, but it's an overpay. You don't know that. So Brandon Prust, people like him, works hard. 4 years, $10 million, that's an overpay.
Well, let's talk about Brandon Prust because he's in the Northeast Division now. He went from the New York Rangers to the Montreal Canadiens, $2.5 million a year, 4 years, $10 million. What does Brandon Prust bring to the Montreal Canadiens?
Tough, good along the boards, works hard, good in the room, good character, good penalty killer. He adds all those elements. I mean, is he worth 4 years, $10 million? No.
Montreal probably needed that. They needed sandpaper.
I agree.
Eric Cole turned out to be a good signing for them, giving them more size on the first line. And Cole put up good numbers last year. But, you know, Brandon Prust is one of those guys. If you ever watched the HBO series, you know, he was giving it to Marian Gabrick and other players on the Rangers. He's the type of guy that, you know, is very popular. You know, and he'll stick up for his teammates. He'll fight. He'll pop in the odd goal every once in a while. I'd compare Brandon Prust to? Like a Darren McCarty.
Don't you always find it interesting, though, that a team that, you know, he excels on, like he was in Calgary, didn't really do much, went to New York, became that player, became the player he is now. And the Rangers, I would assume, had the opportunity to match that number, having seen him close up for a couple of years.
I was a little bit surprised they didn't
decided not to. So, I mean, don't you have to read a little bit into that as well?
Sure.
You know, how much of his success in New York do you think was also a function of the system he played in?
A little bit, Drew, but Montreal does need, you know, I think a little bit, Drew, but it's, he also, you know, he had some nice elements there, but he's not going to do much in the way of offense. I mean, I'll check quickly, I'm assuming he's never scored more than 10 goals in a season.
That's probably his best season.
No, he scored 13.
In New York.
Not last year, the year before. Yeah. So he scored 13.
His best years have been in New York.
Yeah, he has 24 goals in 279 career NHL games.
Yep.
So we're not,
He got a regular role in
he played
New
12,
York, but that's
12 minutes a year, 12 minutes a game last year. So, again, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of that. The Rangers knew exactly what he could provide and didn't re-sign him.
They replaced him with Aaron Asham.
And Taylor Pye.
Who's arguably better.
Francis Bouillon went from Nashville to Montreal. Those two teams made a lot of deals last year. There seems to be familiarity between the two organizations.
You know, Bouillon, Drew can skate, he can move the puck a bit. He's small, not great defensively.
And he spent two or three years already in Montreal, so they're familiar.
Years,
they're familiar with him.
Are you surprised he only got 1 year?
No.
No? You think that's all?
He's a seven guy, right?
He's a little older now.
I think he's 35. Guy, so... You know, I mean, I don't think that's anything that's surprising. He's always been a guy that Montreal's liked. He spent the majority of his career in Montreal, so.
It's the type of guy, too, that'll give them some power play time, decent skater. I like Bouillon. Obviously, they did. Whenever you bring a guy back, I think that probably tells you that they're going to put him into a position where he'll succeed. I kind of like the moves Montreal made. I mean, Montreal definitely... This year, they're definitely, you know, everything is new in Montreal. Therrien came in, Marc Bergevin, I believe J.J. Daniel was just introduced as an assistant coach as well.
Oh, yeah, I always thought they've been a prime bounce-back candidate, too.
Yeah.
And they paid a lot of money for Carey Price.
I like the Carey Price signing.
Well, let's talk about the Carey Price signing. That's a lot of money, I found.
It's a lot of money. I will say this. I'm a big Carey Price backer. I always have been. I think he's one of the best up-and-coming goalies in the league. I think he has the talent level to be the best goalie in the league. Do they pay him a lot of money?
$6.5 million a year.
They pay him a lot of money. Yeah,
but you've groomed him for this day when you were going to pay him that money.
Yeah.
So, I, to be honest with you, it's very subjective with salaries, especially in a year like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But right, the year before the lockout, I think that you know that when we were previewing the show and then we were covering it on Sunday, I think that does have something to do with it. We haven't even got into the big two contracts. Richie mentioned Parise's contract.
We're going to do that next segment. Next segment is dedicated to Parise and Suter going to Minnesota.
If you don't think that has something to do with the upcoming CBA, I think you're fooling yourself.
If it's going to be somebody, you're paying him a lot of money. It's a ton. But at the same time, if it's going to be anybody, for me, I've always liked Carey Price.
It's a top five goalie in the NHL.
I think that's the guy to give it to. But that depends on whether you like the deal. I mean, would I pay him maybe that much? Probably not. But do I think he's the kind of guy who's that's the kind of player you give the money to? Yeah, I do.
Unless you're New York and you've got Lundqvist or, you've got Corey Schneider or even the Jets, Pavlik, I think you don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs would jump at the chance of getting a Carey Price. They would give him that money in a second. I think Carey Price, is the type of guy as well. He's a guy who will steal games.
No, he is 24.
It's amazing.
That's crazy.
Well, so what you're doing is you're buying out his unrestricted free agency years.
Yep.
That's why you have to pay a little bit more for
that. He's already played five seasons,
Right. So he was in the league when he was 20, so you're right. He's going to become a free agent.
He's never posted. I mean, he had one season where he had 905 save percentage.
Yeah.
But he's had a season where he had 923. His career is 916. He's already got 124 wins. He's already got, he's 16 shutouts. And he can move the puck, too. I mean, I know it's a little small aspect, but the guy does have all the talent in the world, and he's only 24. And he's playing goal in Montreal isn't playing goal in Tampa Bay. Playing goal in Montreal is probably the hardest place in the world to play net, and he's done a very good job of it. He seems to have kind of matured over the years. And, you think back to his years when he wasn't maybe the most mature. 21 or 22 years old. 24 seems more mature than before, and... A player, I think, is all the talent in the world.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned Tampa Bay. Marc Bergevin, his first big move, signs Carey Price. You don't think he knows the importance of locking up a goaltender coming from Tampa Bay. It was a huge mess last year. And it's not... Nothing is...
Bergevin was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, coming from before Tampa Bay. Marc Bergevin was the assistant GM on Tampa Bay.
Was he?
Are you sure about that, Ez?
I'll check.
Am I missing something here?
You might be right.
You seem very confident. I mean, I know he was in Chicago, but they hired him from Chicago.
Sure, he was there for at least 1 year. I want to almost say 2 years, but
I'll tell you right now.
I'll tell you what, Ezzy's been right so often lately.
Yeah,
it does make me afraid.
I don't even know.
Okay, why am I thinking that? There's a reason why I was thinking that, but okay.
Well, we'll find out momentarily. You could be right.
It's just the Blackhawks, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then now the world is back into focus.
He played on Tampa Bay from 92 to 95. And from 2002 to 2003.
I thought before Chicago, he was with Tampa Bay. I could have in a management role. I could have been wrong about that. I'm probably wrong about that.
I'm hoping you're wrong about that. You've been right way too often. It's been frightening for me personally. I know that much.
The point being that I think he knows that locking Carey Price up is a big time decision.
It's a big move for the Montreal franchise too, right?
You just secure. You know,
who else do they have is going to take that spot. Well, and there are. I mean, Montreal is not any other city for goaltending.
And if you can play if you can handle the pressure of playing in Montreal, you're a special player.
That's right.
And Carey Price has been the kind of guy who's been able to handle that in past. And there's no reason not to, you know, I'd be shocked, absolutely shocked that if, you know, looking back 3-4 years down the road from now, we say that contract is anything but a good deal. If it becomes an albatross, I would be shocked.
Well, goaltenders are hard to predict. But yeah, I mean, I know
they're hard to predict. But if you had to predict any goaltender in the NHL, it's still being worth, you know, still being in his prime.
That's the guy I'd put it into. For sure.
I mean, and you see some of these other contracts that are going around to goaltenders, and we'll get to Edmonton's contract with Devan Dubnyk, but they make you really shake your head.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I mean, it's a little bit peculiar, some of these contracts. Anyways,
speaking of shaking your head, what's with Derek Roy being traded? That was a little bit odd to me, but. I like Derek Roy.
We haven't got through the whole Northeast yet here, Drew.
No, okay, so
let's go a little bit long here, Timmy.
Okay, we'll
turn down the music.
A couple minutes later.
Now, the Boston Bruins didn't do anything.
Nothing.
So let's just hop over them.
Yeah.
The Leafs signed McClement. McClement is McClement. He's nothing special. If I don't actually mind him as that fourth line guy, he can do some little things, but he's nothing. He's not going to blow the roof off the place. In terms of in terms of Buffalo, that's the team here that's the interest have been made interesting moves. And,
well, Derek Roy, he's a centerman.
That's a guy I like. I know he's a pending UFA. I know after this season coming up, he's an unrestricted free agent. But for Steve Ott and Adam Party can't skate the NHL level. He's a six guy maximum.
It was an odd move to really be Richie. Derek Roy's been there his entire career.
And I know Stevie Ott adds depth, and I know he's gritty, and I know he's got some offensive skills, and I know he can win faceoffs. He can do the little things.
But Roy's your number one center.
Derek Roy's your number one center. And now you're left with Cody Hodgson is your number one center. So Vancouver,
he's not ready for that yet.
He was number three. Now he's over there in Buffalo, number one. He's got a lot of talent, but
I don't like that move.
I know Roy isn't big, blah blah blah. But I mean, Derek Roy for Steve Ott, you're giving up a lot of talent. And Derek Roy's a player that I like. And so, good move for Dallas. Yeah, I like what Dallas has done. I think in an effort to get tough there, I think kind of lost their way a little bit.
Well, you know who was tough on Buffalo? Zach Cassian.
Well, yeah, and I guess Gostad was one other guy they thought would be tough and all that stuff. So, but you look at the Sabres, Drew. Look at the Sabres lineup. Look at the Sabres roster right now, and look at their center spot, and then they have a hole there right now.
Gostad's gone now. Derek Roy's gone now. You've essentially replaced Steve Ott's a tough player, and
okay, you're gonna put Lino in the middle. He doesn't excel that much in the middle. So who else do you have that can play the middle? You want to throw other guys? I mean, again, you have Ennis, who's a winger, great winger, really like him. You have Steve Ott, who can play some center, but you don't have to be number two. Drew Stafford's a winger. Lino, most often, is a winger. Palmeva, winger. Vanek, winger. Where's your center spot? What are you doing to fix it?
Not a lot.
So maybe they make another deal. Well, I don't know. I mean,
it's not, I mean.
And you add Party back there, and you have Regier back there. I mean, you're. Myers skates well for a big guy, but isn't the best skater in the world. Robin Regier is not the best skater. Party can hardly skate.
Traded Gragnani.
Aeroff and Leopold move well, but I realize NHL is getting bigger. But at the same time, you still need to be able to skate in this league to succeed. So I'm a little bit confused.
The big hulking defenseman was sort of thought to be a sort of expiring species. Extinct species. That was the word I was looking for there. But, I mean, it's an interesting move. And, you know, for a guy who doesn't make that many head-scratching decisions in Darcy Regier, that's one that's going to, leaving you puzzled.
Well, depends on what they do now.
They weren't going to re-sign him, I guess. That's the only logical...
And if they get a center and a trade here, it just depends on what their next move is.
They've got to.
Yeah. But quickly on Ottawa.
Yeah.
I have to say that, I mean, they didn't do it. They made the trade, Mathot, for Foligno. Foligno's always been a tweener to me. Never really good enough for a top two role. Probably a little bit too good for a bottom two role.
He'll be a top two role in Columbus, though.
Yeah, and Columbus gave him that money. I think Foligno never turned out to be the player they thought he would be. Yep. What they do is they trade him from a thought. They get a lockdown defensive defenseman, a guy who's from Ottawa, a guy who can play with possibly Erik Karlsson, a guy who can grow with this team.
I have no issues with that move at all. And then you look at Laton Dreft, a guy I thought the Jets should have taken a chance on. You got a one-year deal. I know he's had injury history, concussion problems. Hands-wise, skill-wise, he's up there. For a one-year deal, that'll max pay him $2 million because he's getting a $750,000 signing bonus. I think it's a signing bonus. Yeah, $2 million is the cap hit, at least.
There's no risk.
What's the risk? And a guy who has skill and talent, if he gets injured, he gets injured. Okay. I mean, why not a guy like that who, thinking about it in terms of Ponikarovsky or him, I'm not sure if the Jets are in on it, but Ponikarovsky, a guy you signed for 1.8, a veteran guy who's a UFA after this year, Laton Dreft, you're giving him two, basically the same money.
Arguably better.
For a winger, younger, upside, and he's an RFA after this year.
Laton Dreft is a nice addition. Nice, gives them secondary scoring options. It's always good.
All legitimate questions that you've posed there, my friend. Let's go to break now. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Parise Suter signings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For the latest performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Ryan Dalton on tonight at Rumors. Two shows, 7:45 and 10:30. A very funny individual, Ryan Dalton, at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Call the club for tickets, 488-4520. Gentlemen, I personally think I'm worth $98 million. I don't know how you two feel about that.
I don't know about 98, maybe 96.
96? I'll take 96. I mean, yeah. I'll give you a hometown discount.
Yeah.
What do you think of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter being worth $98 million each?
Well, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of matzo balls.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Richard. You can start on this one.
I think first off, you know, if we can talk about their decision to both go to Minnesota. And then into the, you know, the amount of money. I think, you know, starting last year, I think Richie was the first one to, you know, enlighten me to this, you know, possibility of Zach Parise going back to Minnesota. And obviously we knew.
And we had heard last week, though, that Minnesota didn't have the money to do it.
Right. So. And that was obvious. But, I mean, the reason why I was a little bit surprised last year, you know, after hearing that, mm-hmm. is because Minnesota has not attracted the top free agents in years past. They just haven't. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. And nothing against the city or anything like that. But, I mean, you know, New York, Philly, L.A., those are the cities that attract the free agents. So I was a little bit surprised that they both ended up there, let alone either one of them, because it started to look like the front runner in, you know, for these free agents were Pittsburgh. And we talked about this last weekend. I mean, if you went back and listened to it, you know, I thought that they were, you know, at least Parise was going to Pittsburgh after Crosby called him. And you can, you know, read into that as much as you want to. But, you know, I think that it's fantastic for the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Twin Cities. It's fantastic for the organization. I think it's a great move for them. And obviously, the amount of money, Richie, that they spent was, it's astronomical.
Yeah, I mean, there's two aspects of this, obviously, a couple aspects of it. You know, it does, I think it's a positive for the game that these two players chose to sign in Minnesota, not in New York or Pittsburgh, because as he said, it changes the landscape of the NHL, it puts parity to a new level. It regenerates the interest in hockey at the NHL level in Minnesota, because really high school and college always is ruled there. It regenerates interest.
If I can just step in, apparently Michael Russo posted this. Close to 2,000 more season tickets?
I'm not surprised.
And, so, and that's enough, yeah, you're trying to recoup that investment. Now, you're talking about player salary. You're talking about... see, it appeared that every team was offering very similar money, offering both of them very similar money for the most part.
Yep.
Now, Zach Parise is a player that I love. I mean, he's the hardest worker. He's a great player. He's going to score you 35 goals. He's going to be a great player. 7.5 mil for, you know, until he's, what, until you're 2025, I believe it is?
Well, 13 years, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, until 2025. For a guy that is probably not even in his prime anymore, you know, some of the stats indicate that 23 to 26 is really your prime forward years, is a crazy proposition to me, just because the term is just so insane. 7.5 a year in this landscape, Zach Parise, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Completely fine. For 13 years, no, it's not. It's crazy. For Ryan Suter, in terms of you know, in terms of overall being paid $7.5 a year, I like Ryan Suter's game. I prefer Shea Weber, but I do like Ryan Suter's game. I think that he can skate, he can move the puck, he can play in absolutely all situations. There's really not much not to like.
He's got a nasty streak to him.
I mean, he's a great defenseman.
Yep.
Again, though, I mean, I think sometimes defensemen can even return more value on those long-term deals than can forwards. But having them be a package, and if you're Minnesota and you're going to get them until they're close to 40, and you're going to be able to attract free agents, and you're going to be able to mix them with your group of young talent and the Granlunds and guys that they have, it's a must if you're Minnesota.
Richie, I think you make a good point. I think,
but we need the cap. We need to cap these contracts. We need to help. That needs to be for fans' sake.
I think so.
For fans' sake. These idiot GMs who are all offering this much term, it's nuts.
I think if you go around the table, we're all going to say Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, the coveted free agents of the 2012 summer class, we're going to say that they chose Minnesota. That is great for the city, the state, the entire game.
Yeah.
But as far as the contracts go, I don't think the same people sitting around this table are going to say that that's good for the game, because they easily could have signed for 5 or 6 years. Gotten a little bit more per year.
But let me ask you this too.
And then we could have been in the same situation. I don't really know what the benefit, and I mean, you know, you look at the 11th, 12th, and 13th years of the contract, they're getting $1 million. And I mean, there's just no need to sign a guy. Put it this way, okay? Your average NHL, your NHL career for guys that play, you know, that actually have a significant career is around 10 years, right? Something like that.
Think about it. Duncan Keith signs Ezzie for 5.5 a year,
right?
Doughty for 7. Now I know some of those are years that they're going to be under team control,
but they were for 6 and 7 years,
yeah,
eight years, opposed to 13. I don't know what the need is. You sign a guy, Drew, for 6 or 7 years. You sign Suter and Parise for, let's just call it 7 years. That's essentially signing a guy for the rest of his career. If you look at it, like,
well,
at 27 years old.
They're not going to sign another contract.
It's very unlikely that those guys are going to be impact NHL players after the 10 years of that contract. I mean, you can't, with injuries, and I mean, 13 years is a really long time. The problem with that is that it's circumvention of the cap.
Would the Minnesota Wild been? Do you think the Wild would have been better off offering them, say, 10 years and $100 million?
Sure. Even that's a too long of a contract. But why not?
I think when you're doing it this way, you get that cap it down each year. You're probably better off doing it that way. I just hate it for the game itself. I mean, you know, now you have 13-year deals. These guys aren't. These guys want to be there for good, sure. But I mean, look at guys like Ovechkin. Look at there's many long-term contracts that don't turn out. Look at a guy like Zdeno Chara making 6.9. You're paying Suter now $600,000 more than him. Who's everybody picking in the for the past few years?
You would think that you're taking Zdeno Chara.
So, I mean, the problem with the GMs also, never mind the fact the long-term deals, they don't follow the market, you know.
Not at all.
Well, Craig Leopold goes to Chuck Fletcher and says, I mean, this is Craig Leopold signing. I mean, you know, he has to sign off on this before it gets done.
Absolutely.
He goes and says, we need to make a splash. We're losing market share. We're not as popular as we once were. We have to sell tickets as opposed to, you know, the first number of years where the tickets were just flying out the door. High school hockey's bigger in Minnesota now. College hockey's bigger in Minnesota now. You know,
always has been.
Always has been. But now they, you know, the Wild were the, you know, in terms of hockey, the Wild might have been the third choice.
Not anymore.
Well, and some people. I mean, I went to school with a lot of guys from the Minnesota area. They are as obsessed with college and high school as they are with the NHL. Even more so sometimes. You're right. That's true.
So they didn't make a splash. They made a $200 million splash or $196 million.
It'll sell tickets and it'll improve their product on the ice. They got two great players. But in terms of the overall scheme, in terms of the game itself, if you're a Minnesota fan, you can't be anything but excited. You can't be anything but completely proud of what you've done and the group that you're going to have moving forward. If you're a fan of hockey, you have to be happy that somebody went to Minnesota and not New York or Pittsburgh every single time. If you're a fan of maybe top performance of players, you can't love these 13-year deals.
And that's the problem, is that the game suffers while one team might be better, but
I think positives and negatives, probably the positives outweigh the negatives in terms of the ramifications of this move, though, Drew. Because it shows you that people will go other places, that we'll go to cold weather cities, quote-unquote.
It's not
all
just
that stuff.
And maybe the NHL will start marketing teams besides the Pittsburghs, Philadelphias, and New Yorks.
Because the truth is, one thing is, most teams were offering the same contracts.
Right.
And wherever. Same term. So it wasn't like Minnesota got by with the term or money. They just got by attracting the free agents. So that by that argument, by that line of thinking, a cap on contracts or 5 or 6 year deals, they still would have chosen Minnesota.
It seemed like that's where they wanted to go. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to stay on this topic with Mike Greenlay, the Minnesota Wild color commentator. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.